Paramahamsa Parvratikacharya Asatarsa Vishishimanasa Mangasesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jaya. This confounder Acharya Shila Prabhupada Ki Jaya. Natakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jaya. Namacharya Shila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jaya. Prem Shiko Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jaya. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shri Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jaya. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai, Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai, Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai, Gangamai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirse Sisanyavati Paskatyade Satarani Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutah Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Bhutam Samsajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Bhutamscha And Chakalpa Jivas Chakipas and Via Vachapati Chanam Pavanevio, Vaishnavi Vinamama.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra
Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
February 3rd, 2017, in New Govardhan at Marillenbar, Australia, and it's the appearance day of Advaita Acharya. So this presentation is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, translated and purported by Yasi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Jin Prabhupada Ki Jai. So we're going to look at several topics. We're going to look at Advaita Acharya as the cause of creation, as the teacher of bhakti in two aspects, that he called for the Lord and that he has the mood of a servant. And we're going to look at Advaita Acharya's
wonderful followers. I'm going to look at four of them: Achyutananda, Krishna Mishra, Sri Gopala, and Kamalakanta Vishwasa. So first, looking at Advaitacharya as the cause of creation. So in Adi Lila, chapter 6, text 7, it says, Mahavishnu performs all the functions for the creation of the universe. Sri Advaita Acharya is his direct incarnation. So, of course, all human beings are curious as to where they come from. That's one of the questions that the child asks his or her parents. Where did I come from? And generally, the answer that the parents give the child has to do with just biological conception. But we want to know, where is our origin? Right? People do DNA testing, or they, you know, all different ways of trying to find out, where did I come from? What's the root? It's one of the reasons we study history and archaeology. And people are altogether interested in, where does the whole thing come from? Why is there anything here? What's its origin? What's its source? So human societies from the beginning of time have given many explanations, which fall into two main categories. One is that the creation comes from some intelligent being, and the other is that the creation has arisen without the use of any intelligence, just in some basically inexplicable way. And this, of course, these two philosophies continue to be very prevalent at the present time. So those who just say the universe just appeared, they say that matter is supreme. That matter just appeared, there was nothing, there was no time, and there was no space, and all of a sudden, there was matter from nothing. And this matter was infinitesimally small and infinitesimally dense, which would be pretty supernatural. There's nothing in the laws of chemistry and physics and mathematics that could create such a chunk. And then it inexplicably exploded, and then inexplicably the explosion created order. Generally, explosions create disorder, but somehow that explosion created order. And then somehow, at least on this planet, some combination of electricity and chemicals, some cell started to become alive, and eventually that cell turned into peacocks and ibis and coconut trees and frangipani trees and giraffes and all that kind of thing. So that's a pretty supernatural explanation if you think about it with a cool head. It's not a logical explanation. It's not an explanation according to the rules of science that we know as we know them today. There's no way you can take the laws of science, of physics and chemistry and apply them to that scenario and have it work. So people will criticize that we have this supernatural explanation, that there's this gigantic form, right? This great form of the Lord, who's breathed out the universes and from whose navel comes Lord Brahma, bluish, huge personality with four hands. But that's not actually any more fantastic than exploding infinitely small, infinitely dense chunks. And it's really a question of how we want to see the world. One devotee gave me a video once for our Gurukul about the creation of the world, creation of the universe, which I thought was a little humorous, because who was the videographer, you know, for the creation of the universe? And it starts out with a narrator saying that when we look at the origins of the universe, we find it to be a cold, impersonal machine. That was the exact words. So if we have to have an inexplicable, supernatural, fantastic explanation for the beginning of the universe, why not? Why do you want a cold, impersonal machine? Or do you want a warm, personal, amazing being? So I'd rather pick the warm, personal, amazing being myself, because it makes everything make a lot more sense, and it comports with our experience that things are created by persons. In Adi Lila 6:16-17, it says, Lord Vishnu himself is the efficient cause of the material world, and Narayan, in the form of Sri Advaita, is the material cause. Lord Vishnu, in his efficient aspect, glances over the material energy, and Sri Advaita, as the material cause, creates the material world. So we have these various forms of Vishnu, the Vishnu who glances at material energy and wakes her up. Prabhupada said, like a man wants to wake up a sleeping wife so he can enjoy an exchange with her. So the Lord is waking up the material energy through his glance. And who is the glance of the Lord? Shiva. Yes, or time. And then in his form, Advaitacharya is then actually manifesting the material world. He is God as the creator. In Adi 6.21, says, Sri Advaitacharya is the creator of millions and millions of universes, and by his expansions as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, he maintains each and every universe. So this is Advaitacharya. If we'd like to meet the creator of the world, who is the form of the Lord, the mood of the Lord, who is the creator of the world, that is Advaitacharya. Now, it's interesting that Advaitacharya, although he's Vishnu and he's the creator of the world, he's also a teacher of bhakti. He comes to teach bhakti to himself. He comes like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like Lord Nityananda. They come as if they are devotees of themselves to teach how to have devotion to themselves. In Adi Lila 6.27, it says, as he has formerly created all the universes, now he descended to introduce the path of bhakti. So he's come to show the 64 angas of bhakti. And not only, you know, both the external and the internal mood of a bhakta. Why is he coming to show this? Because there is a need for the living entities to have a model, yad yad tarji charsas. Otherwise, it just remains theoretical. If you read, surrender to Krishna, serve Krishna, perform the angas of bhakti, how do you do that practically, isn't it? You need to have a practical model. You need to have an example. As Prabhupada said, example is better than precept. And there's many ways one can understand that statement, but one of the ways to understand it is having an idea of what to do is not as significant as having an example of doing it. I had a very interesting conversation with one of my granddaughters, and I said to her, you know, I have this list of step-by-step instructions for how you can deal with one of the issues in your life that you were complaining about. And she says, Grandma, I don't like dealing with things like that. I said, you don't? Which was a little inconceivable to me because I like dealing with things like that. And she said, no, not at all. I said, well, how do you like dealing when you have a problem and you want to find some solution to it? She said, well, what I like doing is find somebody who's already solved that problem or who doesn't have that problem and watching them and by intuition and observation, seeing how they deal with it and then just using that as a model for my life. And I thought, oh, that's a really good strategy. So the Lord does that. He comes and models bhakti. Teaches bhakti both directly and teaches bhakti through example. In Adi 6:34-65, it said that Advaitacharya worshiped Krishna with tulsi leaves and water of the Ganges, calling for him in a loud voice. Thus, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared on earth accompanied by his personal associates. And through Advaitacharya, the Lord Chaitanya spread the Sankirtan movement, and through him that he delivered the world. So Advaitacharya is setting this example of a bhakta. The bhakta never says, I'm going to do it. That's what people in the mode of passion say, the lower modes of passion, the mode of ignorance. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. I am the doer. I am the hero. I will save you. I will fix your country. I will fix your schools. I will fix your life. Because I am the doer. But the devotee doesn't have this mood. The devotee doesn't have the mood that I'm the greatest, and I'm the savior, and I'm the friend. Prabhupada would say, the guru doesn't say, I am your friend. The guru says, Krishna is your friend. He said, the guru is the friend in this sense, that the guru is giving you Krishna. So Advaitacharya, although he's the Lord, in his role as a devotee, he's saying, I have to ask the Lord to come. I can't do it myself. The Lord has to manifest. And he's acting as an instrument for the manifestation of the Lord. And that is how we should do everything. There's this wonderful verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita that for one who meditates on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even difficult things become easy. And if you don't meditate on Lord Chaitanya, then even easy things become difficult. My dear friends, if we have something in our life that's really difficult, why don't we meditate on Lord Chaitanya? When I was running a Gurukul, ostensibly one of the most difficult services in the Hare Krishna world, so every day I would go to Lord Chaitanya and I'd say, please give me Gaur Shakti, give me Gaur Shakti, give me Gaur Shakti. And this should be our mood all of the time. Please, Mahaprabhu, you manifest your Shakti. Let me just act as an instrument for you to manifest your Shakti. Work through me. Don't have me, don't let me be in the consciousness that I am the doer. What can I do? How much can we do? A little bit, eh? Even the little bit we can do. Krishna is our ability, Krishna is our intelligence, Krishna is our memory, Mataspatir Ganam Bohanam Cha. What are we going to do? We're really helpless. Like, what's a finger going to do if it's cut off of the body? So Dvaitacharya is setting this mood as a devotee. And it was because of his hearing Advaita's prayer that Mahaprabhu replied, my dear Acharya, I'm very pleased by your prayers. Now you can ask for me any benediction you like. And this is our ultimate means. Anything that we want to accomplish in this world, you know, it's not just, we're not just going to accomplish things by petitions and protests, and as Prabhupada would say, planning commissions, right? By setting up a democratic form of government or a socialistic form of government. We're going to accomplish things by the Shakti of the Lord, by depending on the Lord. What was Advaitacharya's request in Madhyalila 6.167? He said, my only request is that you distribute love of Krishna even to women, laborers, and the ignorant fools as well. As I fit into all those categories, by the mercy of Advaitacharya, I can get the benedictions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya loves everyone. Advaitacharya loves everyone. He doesn't just want the high-class people to get Krishna consciousness. And this is our happiness in the Hare Krishna movement, that no matter how sinful, no matter how fallen, no matter how unqualified I am, just reading this quote from Srila Prabhupada, where he said, I'm so sinful that I can't even imagine myself approaching Krishna. I can't even imagine myself trying to approach Krishna, but my spiritual master, he is dragging me to Krishna. Him and all the chain of disciplic succession. So this is the mood of Advaitacharya. Please, you help those people who have no chance on any from any position. But Lord Chaitanya was thinking, this is from Adilila 6:40-43, Lord Chaitanya was thinking, Advaitacharya is a disciple of Madhavendrapuri. Madhavendrapuri was the guru of Ishwarapuri, who was Lord Chaitanya's guru. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is seeing that Advaitacharya is a godbrother of his guru. And therefore he's saying, I need to respect him as my guru. To maintain the proper etiquette for the principles of religion, Lord Chaitanya bows down at the feet of Advaitacharya and offers him prayers of reverential devotion. So although Advaitacharya is praying for Lord Chaitanya, please manifest through me, when Lord Chaitanya comes, he says, oh, Advaitacharya, you're my superior. You're my superior. This is the beautiful science of rasa. Right? That the Lord, with his expansions and with the jivas, has all these different relationships. Now from Adi 6:40-43 again, Advaitacharya, he considers Lord Chaitanya his master. So you have a little contradiction here, you could say. Like Nandamarj and Mother Yasoda, they don't think of Krishna as their master. They don't think like that. Right? Or even Jagannath Mishra doesn't think like that. He had that dream where a Brahmin said to him, you know your son is God? Please stop rebuking him and teaching him. And Jagannath Mishra says, I don't care if he's God. I don't care who he is. He's my son and I have to teach him. So, but this was not the mood between Advaitacharya and Lord Chaitanya. Advaitacharya had the mood that Lord Chaitanya is my master. He's my superior. I'm his servant. And Lord Chaitanya had the mood, now Dvaitacharya, he's the god brother, my guru, I have to offer him respect. But see, Dvaitacharya also was the teacher of bhakti. He just becomes so happy serving Lord Chaitanya that he teaches everyone, you're a servant of Lord Chaitanya. And in Adi 6:44-45, it says, the conception of servitude to Sri Krishna gives such an ocean of joy in the soul that even the joy of oneness to the Absolute, if multiplied by 10 million times, doesn't compare to a drop of it. And so Dvaitacharya says, Nityananda and I are servants of Lord Chaitanya. Nowhere else is there such joy as tasted in this mood of servitude. Of course, Krishna Das Kaviraj explains that all the rasas have this mood of servitude. It's contained even going up, even though Nanda and Yasoda, they don't see Krishna as their master. What do parents do for children? They serve them. They feed them, they clothe them, they bathe them, they look out for them. So this mood of service. In the material world, service is very unpalatable. Do you know of any parents who say to their children, please grow up and be a servant? They say that? They say, please grow up and be a doctor, be an engineer, right? Be an IT specialist. But who says, please grow up and be a servant? If a child says, you know, I just want to clean hotels. Oh, it's terrible. Why don't you do something more grandiose? But the mood of service to the Lord is actually the highest position, the most relishable position. As Jesus says, those who seek to be first will be last, and those who will be last are first. Things are the opposite to what they appear in this world. In this world, it seems the higher position I can get in, the happier I'm going to be. But spiritually, the lowest position you're in, the happier you're going to be. And Dvaitacharya and Lord Nityananda, they're swimming in this ocean of joy, of servitude. Both of these pictures show very nice leelas, which unfortunately we will not have time to discuss today, for which I profusely apologize. But I would humbly suggest that you open up your Chaitanya Charitamrita during the day and read about these pastimes, this wonderful meal where Dvaitacharya and Lord Nityananda have this very sweet exchange, and the pastime where Mahaprabhu, Dvaitacharya, Nityananda, their devotees, all were acting as cowherd boys, wheeling around rods, and etc. So we don't have time to discuss those leelas. In Adi 6:86-88, Mahaprabhu says, I'm a servant of Lord Chaitanya, I'm a servant of Lord Chaitanya, I'm a servant of Lord Chaitanya, and I'm a servant of his servants. Saying this, Dvaitacharya dances and sings. The source of the sentiment of service is indeed Lord Balaram, and all the expansions who follow him are influenced by this ecstasy. Now, we should keep in mind that Dvaitacharya, as the creator of the material world, and is also called Sadashiva, that Shiva is the essence of what? False ego, right? The ahankara. So Dvaitacharya understands what is identity. And in fact, everything we do in this world, all of our life decisions, are based on our identity. The way we make decisions in life is we get a particular identity. You know, I am a young Australian married man. And then we say, okay, what would the ideal young Australian married man do? And then we model ourselves after that. We make decisions based on that idealized form of our identity. So what Dvaitacharya is telling us as a teacher of bhakti is, change your identity. So let's learn this verse. This is an identity verse. And this is not Muni because it's Bengali, it's Mui. So Chaitanya Dasa Mui. Chaitanya Dasa. Chaitanya Dasa Mui. Tanra Dasera Dasa. Chaitanya Dasa Mui. Chaitanya Dasa. Chaitanya Dasa Mui. Tanra Dasera Dasa. Chaitanya Dasa Mui. Chaitanya Dasa. Chaitanya Radhasam we. Tanya Radhasa Radhasa. Chaitanya Radhasam we. Chaitanya Radhasa. Chaitanya Radhasam we. Tanya Radhasa Radhasa. This is the identity verse. If we find our mind is wandering during japa, during gayatri, during kirtan, during archana, whatever, it's because we have the wrong identity. If you think about where your mind wanders, you will see it wanders to the areas of sochiti, kanchiti, hankering and lamentation connected to your identity. So, especially therefore, like before doing deity worship, we chant a mantra, right? I am not this, I am not this, I am not this. Such mantra also should be chanted before starting japa, any kind of mantras, meditation. What am I? Who am I? If I'm simply a servant of Lord Chaitanya and a servant of his servants, then why do I have to worry about all the things I worry about according to my current identity? I don't. So when we get our identity right, then everything else naturally follows. Srila Prabhupada once asked the devotees, how do you preach to people? Oh, we preach that there's a God. Prabhupada says, no, first preaching is, you're not this body. First preaching is, you're a servant of the Lord. All right, we've looked at Advaita Acharya as the cause of creation and as the teacher of bhakti. Teacher of bhakti both in terms of calling for the Lord, of understanding that the Lord empowers us, and teacher of bhakti in terms of identity of servant. Now we're going to look at some of Advaita Acharya's followers. So from Adi 12, 8 to 9, it says, at first all the followers of Advaita Acharya shared a single opinion, but later they followed two different opinions as ordained by providence. Some of the disciples strictly accepted the orders of the Acharya, and others deviated, independently concocting their own opinions under the spell of Daivi Maya. So it's interesting, there was a letter written to Srila Prabhupada about devotees having different opinions. And the devotee wrote to Srila Prabhupada, I think there's different opinions because of impersonalism. And Prabhupada said, no, there's difference of opinion because of personalism. He said, being a person means you have your own opinion. He said, but there cannot be difference of opinion as far as the process is concerned. So as far as, you know, exactly the details of the process, each of us is going to have our own opinion. Each of us is going to have our own opinion. That's a symptom that we're an individual soul. There wouldn't be any meaning to individuality if we didn't have our own opinion. Then what does it mean to be an individual? And it would be a very wise thing if we stopped fighting over and argued over the details that are people's opinions. The main thing is to agree on the principle. Of course, then we can fight over what's a principle and what's a detail. People who have the modern upadhi of a conservative tend to think that most things are principles, and those who adopt the modern upadhi of liberal tend to think that most things are details. That's basically what demarcates them. So there's some people who says, you know, 99% of what we have are principles. And some people said, no, 99% of what we have are details. Actually, it's probably neither one of those positions is entirely accurate. But one thing that we do need to establish as a society, what's a principle, what's a detail, and then to stop arguing over the details and to make sure we all agree on the principles. As soon as somebody doesn't agree on the principles, then they are deviated. And that can happen even if God is your father, directly. Even if you're the direct child of the Supreme Lord. It's still possible. We have free will. It's still possible to say, no, I accept another principle. In Adi Lila 12:10, it says, the order of the spiritual master is the active principle in spiritual life. Anyone who disobeys the order of the spiritual master immediately becomes useless. So that, of course, is a very heavy statement, that we become useless or asara as soon as we disobey the order of the guru. It's one of the offenses on chanting, to be disobedient to the order of the spiritual master. And here we have a pictorial depiction of the tree of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
And Srila Prabhupada told one devotee, it was here in Australia or New Zealand, that a tree is beautiful if it has many branches. So the concept that a tree should only have one branch is not part of our philosophy. It's not part of our sampradaya. A tree should have many branches. The Prabhupada said a tree looks beautiful if it has many branches. And the flourishing of these many branches is possible as long as it shares the trunk of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One of the greatest privileges I have in my life was a short visit I made many years ago to Manipur. In Manipur, the prevalent religious system there is Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but it's Gaudiya Vaishnavism that follows in the line of Narottam Das Thakur. So it's a somewhat different branch than our ISKCON, which is coming through Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and so forth. And so the details of their practice were different. But they were firm Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and I really found it quite fascinating. I mean, some of the differences that I noticed was that they played conch shells as instruments during the kirtan. So it would have two humongous conch shells. What does it say in the Bhagavatam about Krishna entering Dwarka, the fat, bold conch shells? Huge conch shells. And holding up two conch shells side by side and going from one to the other as a musical instrument during the kirtan. Of course, their tilak is a little different style. They have much more narrow tilak. And they had traveling lady sankirtan parties. So there were groups of women that would travel from temple to temple doing kirtan. And then at each temple, the head of the temple would offer them donations and cloth. So they'd go to each of the ladies and give them some money and give them some cloth, and then they would perform kirtan in the temple. So I found that really interesting. There also, the Gaudiya Vaishnavism in Manipur was intimately connected with the political system. So while I was there, the devotees had arranged for a drama, of course in their own language, I had a translator next to me. It was a drama and a dance drama of the history of Manipur as connected with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it was amazing, it was so enlivening to see a history of a country or a state that was connected with Krishna and connected specifically with Lord Chaitanya. You know, generally, like when we're teaching history in the Gurukul or in our home school, we have to kind of bring Krishna conscious philosophy into it, get a Krishna conscious perspective of ordinary history. But in their case, Krishna was already interwoven into their history because the kings were devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I mean, it was just an extraordinary drama. But it was all in their style. They had their own style of music. They had their own style of instruments. They had their own style of dance. They had their own style of dress. So, for example, the women in Manipur don't wear saris. They wear a kind of lungi and a chadar. They wear, you see this in Assam also. They have a different kind of dress. And the women there, whenever they do any kind of religious ceremony, they wear a saffron silk lungi, so they look like our ISKCON sannyasis. And even the married ladies did that. So especially early in the morning when the women were going to the temples and doing their puja, you'd see all of our impalas, all these ladies dressed in these saffron silk lungis. If they're married, they had a white chadar, and if they were a renunciate, they had a saffron chadar. So I found that also very fascinating. And then later in the day, then they're wearing their various colored lungis. So my point is that there's many, many branches of the Chaitanya tree. But if one neglects the principle, if one has different details, one is still a branch of the Chaitanya tree. But if one neglects the principles, then one gets cut off from the tree and one becomes a sada. So among the followers of Advaita Acharya, there were some that remained faithful to the principles and continued to be nourished by the tree. And there were some that cut themselves off from the principles and they became dried up and they became useless. So we should have some discrimination. Burjan Prabhu asked Srila Prabhupada, how do you tell the difference between a principle and a detail? And Prabhupada said, that requires intelligence. One of my favorite letters from Srila Prabhupada in a different context. He says, use your common sense, and if you don't have any, but any, ask someone who does. So one of the prime followers of Advaita Acharya was Achyutananda. Achyutananda was one of the sons of Advaita Acharya. And Advaita Acharya told Achyutananda, Keshava Bharati is the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya. Now that's a fact. That It's a historical fact. But Achyutananda didn't like this at all, and he argued with his father. Yesterday we had a meeting of some devotees, and I was, as part of the meeting, I was talking about how my granddaughter Tarini and I were having a discussion, and she was presenting her opinion and I was presenting my opinion. And one of the devotees there said, "Oh, that means she wasn't respectful to her grandmother." And I said, "No, actually Tarini's very respectful to me." I said, "It's only been maybe 3 times on our whole 11 months together that she's been disrespectful to me." So Achyutananda had a different opinion than his father, Advaitacharya. And he said, "I don't agree with you. Our Vaishnava tradition is not blind following." What does Srila Prabhupada say? Blind following is? What's the word he uses? Bhagavad Gita 4:34 purport. Blind following is? You should know this. Condemned. Is that a pretty heavy word? He doesn't just say blind following is not such a good idea. He says blind following is condemned. Tadvati pranipratena pariprashnena sevya. To be able to ask questions. And those questions can be, you know, "Hey Krishna, what do you mean you taught the sun god? You're the same age as me. Why are you telling me to give up all abominable actions and also fight?" Those are equivocal instructions. So Achyutananda said to his father, "What you're saying, my dear father, my revered father, is not supported in the Shastra." That's what he said. He said, "What you're saying is not supported in the Shastra." My dear friends, if you think that someone's saying something not supported in the Shastra, you can respectfully say, "Maharaj, oh Prabhu, that's a wonderful thing you're saying. Can you tell me where it is in the Shastra?" I once went to a class where the devotee was making all kinds of assertions that I'd never heard from a Shastra or Acharyas, and I kept saying, "Maharaj, please, can you give me the source?" And in 3 hours, he never gave me one source. If somebody can't quote a source, if they can't quote a Praman, just thank you very much and ignore it. So Achyutananda is saying to Advaitacharya, "Sorry, this doesn't fit the revealed scriptures." Why? Why did he say Keshavarti cannot be the spiritual master of Mahaprabhu according to the revealed scriptures? Because God can't have a spiritual master. He's the spiritual master of everyone. Now, of course, Achyutananda was speaking from the platform of Tattva. Whereas Advaitacharya was speaking from the platform of Rasa. From the platform of Rasa, the Lord does have parents and gurus and so many for his pleasure. So did Achyutananda become, did Advaitacharya become angry at Achyutananda? He say, "You impotent." Did he say, do that? Did he do that? What did he say?
He was very pleased.
He was very pleased. He was very pleased. What really pushed me to stop seeking truth in the religion of my parents and to start looking elsewhere. I was studying at the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York City. And I asked the rabbis there, I said, "How is it that God becomes angry at his own people and threatens to kill them all after he promised Abraham that they would become numerous? How does God become angry at all? How is he willing to break his promise? How is it that Moses convinced God to do something else? And that God says to Moses, 'Yes, you're right.'" With an impersonal idea of God, none of that made the slightest bit of sense to me. And I said to the rabbis, "I don't understand. How does this have anything to do with God?" "Don't ask that question," they said. "That's a disrespectful question." I said, "Okay, I'm going to look for truth somewhere else. You can't answer such a basic question about your theology." So, Advaitacharya was very happy. "Thank you for bringing up this point. Thank you for defeating me philosophically." This should be our mood in preaching Krishna consciousness. Then we go to Krishna Mishra. This is another son of Advaitacharya. In Adi Lila 12:18, it says that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always sat in the heart of Krishna Mishra. Then there's a son of Advaitacharya, Sri Gopal. This is from Adi 12:19-26. When Lord Chaitanya personally cleaned the Gundicha Mandir in Jagannath Puri, Gopal was dancing in front of the Lord with great love and happiness. Kevalananda Kanda, this process given by Mahaprabhu is a dancing religion. It's a dancing and singing. So many religions in the world don't allow dancing, you know that? There are many religions in the world that don't dance. You can sing, but no instruments. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught a system of dancing and singing. So Gopa was singing. And while Lord Chaitanya and Advaita Prabhu chanted the Hare Krishna mantra and danced, there were all kinds of ecstatic symptoms in their bodies, and their minds were very pleased. While all of them danced, Gopal, dancing and dancing, all of a sudden fainted and fell to the ground. Advaitacharya Prabhu became very unhappy, taking his son on his lap. He began to chant the Nisinga mantra for his protection. Advaitacharya chanted various mantras, but Gopal did not regain consciousness. Thus, all the Vaishnavas who were there started to cry. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then put his hand on the chest of Gopal and said, "My dear Gopal, get up and chant the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare." When Gopal heard the sound and felt the touch of the Lord, he immediately got up, and then everybody again danced in great happiness. We're going to look at the follower of Advaitacharya called Kamalakanta Vishvasa. This is from Adi Lila 12:28-54. So Kamala Vishvasa was a servant of Advaitacharya. He was a very confidential servant. And when they were in Jagannath Puri, he wrote a note to King Prataparudra. And the note said, "Advaitacharya, who is the Supreme Lord, is in debt and hasn't been able to pay his debt. Would you please help him?" So, we regularly do this kind of things for our friends, right? Just like you see now on the internet, there's something called crowdfunding. One of your friends has a problem, they're sick, or their relative died, and so some friend has an appeal, right? Make an appeal to help their friend. Or you might go to someone who's rich and say, "Hey, you know, my friend's in trouble, my master's in trouble, could you please help them out?" So that's what Kamalakanta Vishvas did. He sent a note to the king saying, "My master Advaitacharya is in financial difficulty, please help him out." But the problem was that he said, "My master, who's God, has financial problems." So you can see that he's God, is Tattva, and has financial problems is Rasa. Right? Now somehow or other this note came to the hand of Lord Chaitanya. You always got to be careful, right? Whenever you talk about somebody or something, it can get into the wrong hands, especially in writing. Like Prabhupada said, you can say anything but think 1,000 times before you put it in writing. Now maybe if Kamalakanta Vishvas had just gone personally to the king, he wouldn't have gotten in so much trouble. Because he put it in writing, his note got to Lord Chaitanya. So that note established Lord Chaitanya's incarnation, but also said he had a debt of about 300 rupees. Now, of course, today, 300 rupees is basically nothing, but in those days it was a significant amount of money. So Lord Chaitanya, when he heard about this note, he became very unhappy. And he said, he was smiling, but he said, "Kamalakanta Vishvas has made the Lord a poverty-stricken beggar." Then he said to his servant Govinda, "From now on, don't let Kamalakanta Vishvas come and see me." He basically banned him. He excommunicated him. "I'm not seeing him anymore." Now, you remember that Advaitacharya is worshipped by the Lord as a superior, but he thinks of himself as a servant of the Lord. You all remember that? That kind of contradiction where Advaitacharya gets worshipped by the Lord, but he wants to worship the Lord? So Advaitacharya was... when Advaitacharya heard from his servant, he was very happy. Kamalakanta Vishvas was very unhappy. "Oh, I'm not going to get to see Lord Chaitanya anymore." But Advaitacharya was very happy. And he said to his servant, "You're really fortunate. You got punished by Lord Chaitanya." He said, long time ago, I taught about impersonal liberation just so Lord Chaitanya would punish me. Lord Chaitanya also gave a kind of punishment to Mother Sachi. You are the most fortunate. So why did he say this? Because you only punish somebody who's your subordinate. Please keep this in mind. Don't punish superiors. One is not supposed to rebuke or punish superiors. You can disagree with superiors, but you can't punish them. Of course, in our modern time, especially in countries like Australia and America, superiors? Huh? What? We're an egalitarian society. We don't have any superiors. But the concept is there that as soon as you rebuke someone or punish them in some way, then that person must be inferior to you. And because Advaita Acharya wanted this mood of being Lord Chaitanya's servant, he said, Kamala Vishwas, you made it! You achieved it! Lord Chaitanya is accepting you as his servant by this action of punishing you. He's saying, I have the right to punish this person because he's my servant. Then Advaita Acharya went to Lord Chaitanya and he said, the favor that you've showed Kamala Kant is so great. You've never shown me such a favor. Have I committed some offense? Just think about this for a minute. Lord Chaitanya is saying, Kamala Kant committed an offense and therefore he has to be banned from my association. And Advaita Acharya says, have I committed an offense that you haven't banned me? The fact that I'm still able to go see you casually must be indicative that I'm offensive. He turned it inside out. You all follow? He went to Lord Chaitanya, you're showing more favor to my servant than you've shown to me because you've never punished me like this. So Lord Chaitanya laughed and laughed and said, okay, Govinda, go get Kamala Kanta Vishwas and bring him here. Then Advaita Acharya said, now you've called him back and let him see you. Now he's superior to me in two ways. First he got punished by you, then he got called by you. And Lord Chaitanya was very happy with this moon of Advaita Acharya. Now Lord Chaitanya gave a very important instruction to Kamala Kanta Vishwas. He said, why did you damage Advaita Acharya's religious principles? He says, if a spiritual master accepts money or grains from materialists, his mind becomes polluted. So Lord Chaitanya here was saying that King Pratyaparudra was a materialist. He was saying, Advaita Acharya is a teacher, he's a spiritual master. If he takes money or if he takes grains from a materialistic person, his mind will become polluted. So why is that? You know, what we know Raghunath Das Goswami, whose appearance day it was yesterday. Initially, when he went to Jagannath Puri, he was taking money from his very wealthy father, who wasn't really a materialist. I mean, King Pratyaparudra wasn't a materialist at all, actually. But he was taking money from his father, Raghunath Das Goswami, and he was using the money to feed Lord Chaitanya. He did that for, I believe, 2 years. Then after that time, he stopped doing it. And I wondered for many, many, many years, why would Raghunath Das Goswami not take money from his father to worship Lord Chaitanya? And then I happened to spend some time in a temple where a very wealthy person who lived at a far distance from the temple was paying salaries to all of the managers of the temple. And I saw that it ended up compromising everybody in the temple. People started, you know, the people getting these salaries, they started just coming into the temple at 10 o'clock in the morning. They stopped coming to the morning program. They started doing substandard work. One of them was the head of the restaurant started falling apart. One of them was the head of the gift shop started falling apart. Why? Because some rich person in a distant place was automatically giving me money, and my money was no longer tied to what I was doing. I no longer had to please the devotees of the temple, I no longer had to please any authority of the temple, I just had to please this rich man someplace else. And I saw that it compromised everybody. If somebody's maintaining us, then we want to please that person. And it's very important, especially for preachers, they should really understand that no one is maintaining them except for Krishna. If they think anyone else is maintaining them, they're going to be in trouble. Of course, we have a problem in modern society that people do not maintain preachers. It's a really serious problem. I mean, when my husband and I were running a Gurukula, if we had said, we're going to teach for free and just please give some donation, we would have gotten like a bag of rice. And we didn't have the fortune in America to have the government maintain the school like you do here in Australia. Because in America, there's separation of church and state, so the government can't give any money to a religious school. If they do, you can't have to get God out of your school. Right? So we had to have the parents maintain us. And I thought if we asked the parents just to give us some donation, then they'd give us, you know, here's a sari, or here's a bag of rice. And I couldn't go to the bank like that. You know, oh, here, banker, we're going to pay our mortgage with a sari. You know, it just wouldn't work. And people don't have a culture of maintaining brahmanas. It's just one of the things in the mode of ignorance that of not giving remunerations to the priests for a yajna. And it was either Kamsa or Anikashipu that said destroy any sacrifices in which the priests are remunerated. So the idea is that the brahmanas don't have to take a salary because people are naturally giving them donations. The government is giving them money from the taxes, and the people are giving them donations. That's not the case today. So today, if you want to work as a brahmana, you know, you may have to work for a university and get a salary. It's a very unfortunate situation. But as soon as we take food, grains, money from materialistic people, we have to be careful that our consciousness doesn't become polluted. And this is especially true if you are a teacher of truth. And we see that the scientists, the philosophers, when they're maintained by governments, when they're maintained by businesses, what do they do with the truth? They distort it for the pleasure of their masters, correct? Right? There'll be some study on some new medical device, and then at the bottom it says, this was funded by the manufacturer of the medical device. And as soon as you understand that the study on the new medical device, or the study on the new pharmaceutical, was funded by the manufacturer of that pharmaceutical, you can understand the study is compromised. Lord Chaitanya says when one's mind is polluted, it is very difficult to remember Krishna. And when remembrance of Lord Krishna is hampered, one's life is unproductive. If we're having difficulty remembering Krishna, maybe there's something polluting our consciousness. Lord Chaitanya then said, thus one becomes unpopular in the eyes of the people in general, for this damages his religiosity and fame. A Vaishnava, especially one who acts as spiritual master, must not act in such a way. So again, what we went over today was that Advaitacharya is the cause of creation, he's the teacher of bhakti, and that he called for the Lord, the teacher of bhakti, and that he has the mood of a servant. We looked at his wonderful followers as Achyutananda, Krishna Misra, Sri Gopal, and Kamalakanta Vishwas. There's much else about Advaitacharya we could talk about, so many wonderful pastimes of Advaitacharya, but we want to keep to the time frame here, and I have some meetings at the school, so we can take one question. Yes, please.
Thank you very much for your class. You sort of answered this question, but you mentioned even if your father is God, you may have a different opinion. So Advaitacharya had six sons.
Yes.
So three become Vaishnavas and three become Mayavadis, and he rejected them. So would that be a matter of simply those three sons, their free will, or is there some sort of leela, something?
Well, it's mentioned in the verses that there was some will of the Lord and some sort of leela involved there also. It's specifically mentioned in the verses. Thank you very much for your hospitality.